Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight familiar, your butt at the party.
And Jake Latondras.
I am bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, didn't say it.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur in the Duck South Studios on this stormy Saturday morning. And joining me on the other end of the line, South member Jacob Poole. Jacob, you're one lucky son of a gun.
Man, the good Lord has smiled on us over here. That's all I can tell you.
All right, so let me give the kind of the Roman numerals of this. Jacob hunted yesterday with his son and then went and hunted with your cousin and his
nephew, brother,
and his son this morning and killed another turkey. So I got to know, Poole called me and he said, you got to hear the details on how, you know, all this went down. I said, let's make a great podcast. Let's record it.
Man, anytime you got stories like this, you got to get them out there. Yeah, you want to start with Luke's yesterday?
Let's start with that.
Opening morning, my stepson and I, we get up about 3:45, get everything ready. Get to noticing, you know, he's got his jacket on backwards. We got a little leaf suit on. All his legs are on the inside instead of outside, so we had to correct that. We get on the truck, drive about an hour, get over there, get set up. We geese off in the woods, about a three-quarter mile walk. We ease back up in there, get set up where we think we ought to be at. Get his little chair set up. I get mine set up. Get the little decoy set out, and before I get sat down good, we hear the first one gobble. Don't know how you make it.
Are they gobbling that good down there right now?
They were yesterday. Totally different story today. Didn't hear the first one today. But we get set up. We can hear a bird in front of us, one behind us, and one across from us. So we know we've got three different birds gobbling. And they're basically answering themselves. I'm not really even touching a call yet. We listen to them for about 20 minutes. I start calling, and one of them starts cutting me off. Every time I call, he cuts me off. Luke's excited over there. He's listening. We're learning. It's his first turkey hunt. First hunt. We get set up, sitting there listening a little more, and I told him, I said, man, he's on the ground. Call again. He cuts me off. Man, he's on his way. Get set up, get to looking around a little bit more. And by the time I noticed about 60 yards out to the left, he pops out. Well, I tell Luke, I said, man, there he is. I get no movement out of him. He's to my left.
All right. So set this up. Y'all are gently pushed kind of in back in the wood line of a
We're about 10 feet off the edge of clover field. And he can see where we had the gobbler set up, but I had him covered really well. So he's got a lane that he can see in. I'm sitting up a little higher so I can see a little further. Well, a third time I said, Luke, turkey, he still never moved. So I elbowed him, nudged him a little bit. By that time, I see his gun start to raise, and I'm like, make sure you own him. Let him clear the decoy. Let him come out of strut, because we'd had that conversation. You know, you don't want to try shooting him at full strut. Let him pop his head up and then get him. You know, well, about the time he cleared. Go ahead.
I was gonna say this, but one of the things that I've noticed hunting, because that's what I've really gotten into with turkey hunting the past few years, is taking youth. And one of the things that I notice a lot of youth, and I try to explain to them when they're hunting with me, ease the gun up gently.
Yeah, there's no slow movement. Everything's got to be gentle. You know, from moving, swatting a mosquito out of your face to trying to adjust your glove to bringing your gun up, everything's got to be gentle and smooth. And there's a lot of times where you stop a motion mid-motion. You know, if he's turned and he's showing his fan to you, you can get away with a little more. If you've got a decoy out there and he's looking at it solid, then you got a little extra play room. And that's one of the reasons, if I'm hunting by myself, I usually don't take a decoy, more run and gun. But if you've got a child or a new hunter with you, you know, you have to kind of make adjustments to account for that. But he gets set up, turkey comes by, and about the time he clears my strutter decoy, he's still in full strut, going straight to the hen. He's cut right in front of my strutter going to that laying hen. He hammers him. And I'm like, hey, what happened to letting him come out of strut? He's like, well, I was on him. So he dust rolls him, gets up. I've got it all on video. He's running out there to him, gets over there. And we had discussed the night before that if he started flopping, you know, you need to get your foot on his head. You know, keep him from beating himself all up. Also keep him from reviving himself and taking off. So he's hustling out there. Well, he stomps once. Turkey move. He stomped twice. It looked like we had a Mexican dance going on out there. We're really getting at it. Finally, he gets on it, and I hooped, he hooped. I told him, I said, man, take your face mask off so I can, mom and daddy, you know, mama, everybody can see, you know, how happy you are and stuff. He threw his face mask about 10 foot over to the right. And he, man, you can't get that feeling anywhere else, in my opinion.
Oh, no.
It's just, it's phenomenal, man. And then, like you say, this morning.
Does he expect it to happen like that every time now?
We had that discussion that was a 1 in 100, you know, 1 in 40, 1 in 100, that it did not happen like that every time. They don't always work. They'll hang up. Anytime you fool with a turkey, just go ahead and expect the unexpected is all I've ever learned. If you think you've got him figured out, just go ahead and give it a second, and he'll change his mind completely and do something different. But that's the fun part. If it was the same way every time, who wants to do that?
Well, I agree.
And, you know,
I agree.
I've heard it before down here, being down here in Southwest Mississippi. If you can kill an Eastern turkey down here, you can go kill one anywhere in the country. That's what I told him yesterday. I said, you're fixing to learn something that you can take everywhere else and apply. You know, you learn how to kill one of these spooky things down here, you can go anywhere else and kill one, I promise.
I just can't believe he just, usually this time of year, those suckers are so henned up, man. I've swore to myself that I'm not going till, I'm going to take some youth hunting over the next couple of weeks, but me, myself, to try to kill one, I'm kind of holding off this year because I wear myself out those first 2 weeks.
Rocky, I hate, now, don't shame me for this now, but I'm going to quote Rob Groom just a second. You can't kill one on the couch.
Lord. Oh, I'm not saying I'm on the couch.
You can't kill one if you're not in the woods, baby. You got to get out in the woods and go after him.
Oh, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that I'm not going to go out there and spend 10 or 12-hour days. And look, don't get me wrong. You can stay out there, boy, between 10 and 2 o'clock in the early season. You can.
10 and 2 when they end up is a sweet time to be in the woods or be checking fields.
Oh, I agree.
You get one, it won't do anything. Hens are cutting you off. Hens are circling. Jakes are piled in. go out there about 10 o'clock and start gently calling. You get one answer.
Poole, let me ask you this. What would the percentage be of people by 8 or 8:30 are going, headed back home?
Oh, a lot. I know that's not a percentage. I would probably say 80% of the people I know.
That's the number that I was thinking.
And a lot of times that's what work or, but I mean, if you've got a weekend and a day that you can spend in the woods and don't have other pressing issues, now rock and roll, stay at it. But yeah, I mean, I've got those mornings too, to where I've got till 8 o'clock, I got to be out and be gone, and you're open to, you can make him do the dance and talk a little dirty to him and make him come on in and seal the deal early. But, it don't always happen that way.
I would venture to say that 70% of turkeys, this is just a educated guess from my experience, are killed within the first 15 minutes of them flying off the limb or between 10 and 2.
That's probably, you could probably go with that. I mean, I'm not a biologist or a research guy, but you could say that. I know in my experience, most of mine, if you do your homework, you know where they're at. That's what happens. But now if I walk in somewhere blind, I like to travel a lot. I hunt every chance I get. If I've got a buddy that calls and says, "Hey, birds are hot in Tennessee, you want to come?" I go. If we don't have a family obligation, but, you walk in somewhere new, it may take you longer to figure out where everything's at or, where you need to be, or you can be the greatest caller in the world. And if you can't read a turkey or figure out terrain, and I'm by far not the best, but after years of doing this, you do get a few little tricks that you figure out, and you're going to be an 8:30. The birds this morning did not gobble, not the first time. And it was 9 o'clock before we finally dropped the hammer on him. Man, it was just a completely different hunt from yesterday morning.
Yeah, today is just one of those days, man. It's kind of like a duck. It's just one of those blah days. Ducks just don't get up and move around much. It's just that changing pressure is on the way. Pressure's real low. Cloudy,
pressure
overcast.
Change, it's overcast. High wind this morning. I mean,
it's hard to get an animal to do anything. It's kind of like the second day after a cold front's come through and your cows are laying down in the pasture. And pretty much tell you that's what the ducks and deer are doing too.
Usually at that point, on the worst, nastiest day of mine, my cows are having calves. They're going to pick the absolute worst day, and I'm going to have 10 calves hit the ground that day. You can go ahead and get ready for it.
But that's, you know what I'm talking about? That second full day after a cold front's come through, it's sunny,
oh, yeah.
no wind, your cows are laying down in the pasture a lot of times.
One of my favorite times in the world, turkey hunts when a light drizzling rains. Can't
really?
Tell you why they move, but they always seem to move. They may not gobble a lot, but they're going to move. And you know as well as that, I mean, a turkey lives outdoors, so I mean, whether it's raining, snowing, sleeting, sunshine, and he's in the elements at all times.
That's kind of like Josh
reason,
was talking about.
I have had phenomenal success on just the light drizzly days. Not a downpour, just a little light drizzle. People say, "Oh, it's going to rain in the morning." I'm gearing up, ready to go.
A lot of people kill a lot of turkeys if one of those big cold fronts is moving through. Lightning popping to the west of you, and you kill that turkey the first 30 minutes of a hunt. With a strong cold front and thunderstorm line about to hit you. I've done that with ducks too, though. I've done that with ducks many, many times.
Yeah, as long as the lightning's not close.
Yeah, that's what I'm not saying. I'm saying that, you know, you're a couple hours away. There's lightning popping to the west. You see it headed your way. And, man, some of the best duck hunts I ever went on in my life were.
Rocky, would you say that is that a change of pressure?
No, yeah.
What do you think, really, that just that pressure change? I mean, they're way more sensitive to it than we are.
Oh, heck yeah. I mean, that's everything. I can't sit here and say the science behind it, but, man, I killed some of the best duck hunts was when the pressure was on you, not the pressure of the weather, but the pressure was on you to get a duck hunt in before severe weather hit as a guide.
I don't know how y'all do the I've gone and called, you know, kind of field in guide a couple times duck hunting over the years, and you know, I've got friends that guide, and every once in a while I go help, and I don't want that's one job I'm gonna pass on. I've thought one time that it would be fun, and I'm like, you know, that's not my thing. There may be a pile of money in it, but I think I would actually get to where I didn't want to get up and go in the morning some mornings. And I've never had that feeling yet. So,
well, you were kind of the guy this morning. Let's talk about the hunt today. So your brother called you. Your brother or brother-in-law?
My little brother. He called, said they were going back again this morning. We got to talking. He wanted to hear the story. We got talking about it. Well, we decided we were going to double team one and go and film. I was actually, Casey, listen to this podcast. We'll make sure this is understood. I was the assistant caller this morning and the film camera guy. We really didn't call a whole lot this morning because nothing was gobbling. I mean, we were more we sat in the first spot for probably an hour. Nothing moved. Nothing made a sound. We decided we'd make a little change. Had another spot on the place we could go check. We went and checked it. And as my nephew, who's six, told me, he said, watch this, Uncle Jake. He said, Daddy's going to do the belly flop and crawl out to the pipeline. I said, baby, he's going to do a what? He said, watch him. He's going to do the belly flop. Well, if anybody that knows me, I had way more fun with the belly flop than I probably should have. I made sure he said it about 10 times this morning. And so sure enough, Micah crawls out. We look. He gives us a little sign. There's one hen up. So we circle around, get up on a ridge, trying to see if there's anything around. We call a little bit, nothing. Look down the pipeline, the hen's still there. Call a little bit more, she eases off. So we circled around, kind of checked, and got to looking at it, and there was a creek run through a pipeline, and a couple little cut lanes come into that area. I said, look, let's just, you know, we decided we'd ease down there and just give it a try. So we eased in, set our decoys out real quick in the middle of the pipeline, and got set up, got the camera all set ready, and just enjoying the morning with a six-year-old, enjoying his conversation, his thoughts, and, you know, he's got different thoughts than you do. He's worried about the butterfly, and you're like, man, where is that turkey at? And he's studying a leaf, you know, just completely different perspectives from him to us. And we hadn't called, probably been sitting down about 10 minutes. Made a few calls, still heard nothing. Looked up, and here come two running down the pipeline. Come straight out, right up to the strutter decoy. They blew up, danced around him for a second, kind of fooled with him, turned him around, turned, moved over, got on the hen. Well, the whole time, I can hear Micah telling Miner, you know, shoot him, shoot him. I'm trying to make sure the camera's staying on everything and trying to get everything just right. And they move away from the hen, come back to the gobbler, still doing the dance. They haven't made a sound, haven't drummed, haven't gobbled, haven't done a thing. They just strutting full bore. Get set up, and he drops a hammer on him. dust rolled him. Couldn't ask for a better shot from a 6 year old with a 20 gauge at 13 steps. He smoked him. He gets up running. I've got the camera trying to stay on him. He had told us the night before that if it went to flopping, he had watched Luke's video, and he said, "Uncle Jake, if it flops, I'm going to tackle him. I'm not doing that head stomping thing. I'm going to tackle him." Okay, baby. You do what you want to. We got Band-Aids. We'll patch you up. No problem. When I tell you he looked like he had run out and hit a wall, that turkey flopped and he put the brakes on. He wouldn't move. It's like, baby, go get him. Uh-uh. Y'all get him. So we had to ease out and get him. But, I mean, he stopped cold turkey, I guess you could say. And he wasn't going any closer. He was done. And Rocky, I can't tell you, yesterday morning, I know Luke had a great time. This morning, I know Miner had a good time. I don't think they enjoyed it anywhere remotely close to what we did. I don't, maybe in a couple of years, they'll appreciate it as much as we do, but I don't think it's sunk in yet. And to be able to capture on both on film and to be a part of it, it's made my season so far. I mean, if I didn't get to go again tomorrow, I'd be just as tickled as I could. Now, I say that, and then I'm going to stretch that, too. Probably will. Right.
So you're going to post most of these videos up under this podcast, right?
Yes. Yeah, I got to I've got a little bit of editing to do on one, and I got to start on the other one. Man, I hadn't been home yet. I left at 3:45 yesterday, and I hadn't seen my house yet. I drove into Bay Springs about 10:30, 11 o'clock last night, got in the bed, got back up at 4 this morning, took off again. After going to a school program and coaching softball yesterday and today. So when I actually get to where I can sit down, I'm going to run through these things and get them edited, and we will get them put on here.
And now your wife wants you to go to New Orleans, right?
Yeah. For some reason, I now have to. I'm headed to New Orleans later, and I tried my best to talk her out of it. Told her I had another young man that needed me tomorrow. He just needed me. And when you tell her that a child needs help, you know, I thought she would go for it. She didn't bite at all. Not even a little bit. She said we were going, room was booked, and that was it. So I guess that's what we're doing.
See, I would go to New Orleans and I would be a zombie sitting at that table. You give me a couple of beers, I'm zonked. I'm gone.
It depends on which table I'm at. If I'm at a dinner table, yes. If I'm at the Texas Hold'em table, it may be a whole different ballgame. I may be up till 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. I may still be able to make it in and make a turkey hunt. If I can sweet talk her into driving me home, but I don't think that's going to happen. You know, you can hope for a lot of things, and my wife's a good woman. She puts up with a lot for me. I'm not the easiest person to. I like to hunt a lot. I'm outdoors. I'm outside all the time, and she either loads up and goes, or she holds the fort down while I'm gone. So. And it took me several years to realize I'm not that sure she likes to hunt that much, but she doesn't like to miss the story. You know, you go on a hunt, you something happens every time. Something remarkable, something memorable. You know, you have something that you can come back, man, you can tell that story. And, it eats on her when I come back, I've got a good story and she didn't get to go. You can just tell it burns her. She's not happy at that point. I've almost actually got to the point where I don't come back and tell stories.
See, I think that's why it's so important. And listen, this is not a promotion piece, but I think it's so important to two reasons to keep a journal. Number one is to remember, even if you just write, Larry tripped and fell in the creek. You, if you see that title, you remember what happened. And then on top of that, you know, turkey hunting changes so much day to day. There's so many valuable lessons that you could learn from keeping up with everyday turkey hunting. Ducks are good. Look, I tell people all the time, and maybe it's just because I did it for 22 years and every single day of the season, ducks are going to do what ducks do. But man, a freaking turkey, whew, and unless he's in full rut about that 10-day window that I'm talking about earlier, you know, they kind of have a mind of their own. You agree with that?
Hands down, agree with that. A turkey can do one thing one day and something completely different the next. He can do it within 2 seconds. I mean, if he sees something that he does not like, he's going to change. If he or sees, thank goodness they can't smell. I don't know if you'd ever kill one other than with a truck or a rifle if they could smell. But to go back to your point there, I'll be honest, I did a fair to middling job of reporting and writing down my hunts during duck season this year. And as poor of a season as we had, I covered a lot of ground and actually had a pretty good year. Was lucky enough, fortunate enough to get to go to Canada, had some friends called in different states. So I went and hung out, finished the season on a diver hunt in Florida with I'd hate to know how many million-dollar house behind us in Pensacola, Florida, on the intercoastal waterway. Darnest thing I'd ever seen. Parked my truck at the beach parking lot, walked across sand dunes, got in a boat. Never in my life had this country boy ever dreamed that he would ever hunt a duck that way. So pretty remarkable year. Made most of my journal entries, but I was going back through my book the other day after I wrote Luke's down last night. And first day of duck season in Louisiana this year, group of guys I was hunting with, one of them, won't say a name, but he turns, there's a group of ducks, teal, diving in on us on the backside. We're in a pit blind. And when he turned, he went to get his gun up, and somehow or another, he forgot that he had two hands. When he turns, he shoots it one-handed. It come back and the rib hit him right between the eyes and split it. We laughed at him. I mean, you know, I'm going to go ahead and say we laughed first and then we checked on him later. But it was, I hadn't even thought about it till I just happened to glance back through. But man, the journals are wonderful. I know you said you weren't trying to give them a plug, but you know, it's a complete hunting journal. And it's for the season 2018-2019. I debated buying a separate one for turkey season and buying a, you know, and you can do that. But what I've done with mine is I broke it into duck season, and now I'm on turkey season. And probably the beginning of duck season, I'll pick up another one and start all over again. But it just helps you remember. And I hope one day my kids read it, because I write everything. I mean, I try to remember something different that happened, you know, not just the normal dog fell off a stand, we broke a rope, you know, we did this, motor broke, something, you know, took a young man this year with me, first time he'd ever been on a duck hunt. 6:30 in the morning, he looks at me and he said, "Coach, I think I got a hole in my waders." I said, "Baby, you think you do or you know you do?" He said, "It's above my ankle right now." I'm like, "Well, baby, that's past thinking. You got water up past your ankle. You're past thinking. You're on the know by now." Little things are tough. He like a lighter nod. He stayed till about 10 o'clock. We killed a few and out we came. He said Coach, once it got numb, he said, "I didn't feel it anymore." Yeah, that's also called frostbite too, I think. and it was one of those 30-degree mornings, you know, one of the cold mornings we had. But he toughed it out. But, you know, things like that. I hope 20 years from now my kids will go back and read through them. And
yeah, I guess the reason I said that, I was thumbing through some the other night, and what made me think about that was I had it written down the first time that I ever heard Backup Terry. And it was on a guided duck hunt, one of the guys hunting with me. And he starts talking about this video called Backup Terry. And I guess it was 2 years ago, maybe. 2 years ago on a hunt. And that hunt will stick with me forever because I remember just somebody finally got their phone enough signal that they could pull that video up and showed it to me. And, you know, it's the most hilarious thing I ever seen. It's the Backup Terry. I mean, I'd seen it, but not really watched it. You know, you scan through social media and you see crap and funny. Then you get with a group of guys and you watch it and it is freaking hilarious.
It's amazing how that works sometimes, isn't it?
You
hear something by yourself and you're like, that's all right. Then you get somebody else. You've got one guy in the group that just can't stop laughing, and that's contagious sometimes. Because you're laughing more at him than you are at what's actually happening until you realize, hey, that is pretty funny. So, yeah, I know where you're at there.
Hey, look, when is the event coming up that y'all do with the youth in y'all's Delta Waterfowl chapter?
Well, it's April the 13th this year. Be in Liberty, Mississippi. We had 171 kids last year, but what I did last year, Delta is our biggest sponsor. That's the chapter that we represent. And then last year, I got together with 10 other organizations, and we partnered up and just decided we were going to call it the Kids Wildlife Expo. It's completely free to kids. Everybody sets up their own booth. Everybody brings their own stuff. And, you know, this year, NWTF, our local chapter here, is partnering with us. So we're actually hoping to have 14 or 15 organizations. I'm working on trying to get us a couple good personalities. So if you're not doing anything on April 13th, we'd love to have you. But
13th.
You like how I threw that in there?
The pressure's on.
Social media, you'd be amazed at, you know, and you may not be, but it's amazing how many people know you that you don't have a clue who they are because they heard you on this or they saw your post on that or they, you know, when we were doing the Duck South right there at the first season when we were doing our videos and stuff, I've got a young man that shoots skeet with me 1 to 2 days a week. I coach in Pee Wee football, and he saw our video about me talking about, you know, before duck season, you know, one of the things you can do to prepare is go to your local skeet range, you know, go put some shells down range, go get a little practice in. His mama called and she said, hey, he wants to talk to you. Well, he got on the phone. He said, Coach, I'm that buddy. He said, you know that buddy that shoots three times and can't hit anything? He said, I'm that buddy. Can I go with you to the range Sunday? He now makes, he's shooting 23 out of 25. It's getting to where a lot of folks don't want to shoot with him anymore at 11, shooting a 12 gauge. It's really too big for him.
Wow.
So it's neat the way it works. But, yeah, we've got, I know Mississippi State Extension Service will be there, the Hog Hunters Association, Hand Grabbers Association, Mississippi Trappers Association, 4-H, our local 4-H will be there. I don't have my list in front of me. That's the ones I can think off top of my head. But we're hoping to have 250 to 300 kids this year.
Y'all use it as an educational experience with kids, though, right?
We do. Every organization kind of goes through what they do. You know, we'll have a duck identification station. We'll have a duck call station. We'll have a boat there with a blind in it, and we'll let them take BB guns and kind of pop up out of the blind and shoot targets. We did paintball guns a couple of years ago. The game and wildlife, game and fish, they'll have usually a gun safety. We would love to be able to do a hunter's education, but that's just a longer process to get it done. You know, you got to be pre-registered and everything, but 4-H goes through each group, kind of shows you what they do and how you can get involved in an outdoor activity. Man, I am the world's worst about sitting inside, and seeing a child sit inside just drives me, you know, growing up on a farm, you won't be outside doing something. I mean, if, if it was a clear day like today and there was nothing else I could do, I could get a BB gun and go terrorize something.
Oh, yeah.
And if we can get our youth that are, you know, stuck on these phones or stuck on their TV, if we can get them outside, if you want to go white perch fish or you want to go hand grabbing or you want to go frog gigging, turkey hunting, deer hunting, I don't care. We want to help you learn a little bit about it and maybe get some of the tools and resources you need to be able to go. Yeah, we give out duck calls. We're going to give out duck identification books. We give out hats. And usually everybody's got something free for them. But the main thing is just trying to educate them and show them that there's more than sitting inside playing on your phone. There's something outside you can be doing to be enjoying what the good Lord made.
April the 13th. Now, what town and where is it going to be?
That is in Liberty, Mississippi. Home of Jerry Clower.
Jerry Clower.
Route 4, Liberty, Mississippi. It'll be at the Vance Park, Ethel Vance Park facility. It's a big rodeo arena that we have here. And now, Rocky, to say this, we had 171 kids last year. The event started at 9, and I think at 7 that morning, the tornado sirens went off, and we had horrible weather and still had 171 kids. I think had we had clear weather last year, we'd have had 250 kids last year.
Wow.
And that's our goal this year. We want to grow it each year. What I would love to do is partner with some people. I'd love to rent the convention center in Jackson and do a 3,000 or 4,000 kid. You know, I pitched several groups and have some interest in, and I think it would be phenomenal to do it. You want to get your name out? You want to promote the outdoors? Why not do it on a bigger scale?
The family that Jerry Clower always talks about, I'm losing my mind to the Ledbetter family.
It happens with age out here.
I have a Jerry Clower Pandora station that I listen to. I would say 50-60% of the time if I have Pandora on. So how that slips my mind, I don't know. I've heard, I could just about repeat every story that he tells. But the Ledbetters, Kit Stovall, man. Kit Stovall was raised around there. And what's so crazy about it is, before I get back to the Ledbetters, Jerry Clower actually drove Kit's mom and daddy to Nashville on their honeymoon. Kit, one that guided for me for years.
Yeah, I know Kit real well.
Jerry was going to set him up with a unbelievable place because he was so well taken care of in Nashville. He wanted to drive him up there and get him the best of the best. It's crazy, man.
You know, we actually, my senior year in high school, I believe it was, when they moved back to Liberty, they live over here in East Fork, actually, off of Amazing Grace Lane, and which is about 2 miles from my house. But the guy that actually built it, I worked for him some, and I actually got to drive nails on that place. So it was always pretty neat. Mr. Jerry'd always come out every morning, and he'd have something new to tell us, and you're trying to work and laugh. And we usually didn't get a whole lot done while he was out there, and then once he went back in, we actually got a good bit done. But if you're ever over here, he has a museum. His wife, Miss Homerline, they have a little building outside their house where they actually have a museum where you can go in and see all the stuff from different places over the years, different places he played and picked up. It's really neat. I mean, if you're into that, or if you've followed him over the years, it's a lot of really neat stuff in there.
And I guarantee you, everybody that listens to this podcast loves and listens to Jerry Clower. But the Ledbetters, my uncle was actually good friends with Jerry Clower. And I've never asked him, but is the Ledbetter family, was that just a made up name of a family that
grew up with? I'm not sure if any of them are still in this area, but from all the accounts that I've gotten from the older folks that I eat lunch with and visit with. No, they were here at one time. No, that was the one thing about Jerry's stories. Most of Mr. Jerry's stories were all true. And if you go back and check, he never says a cuss word in any of them. He told good, clean jokes, you know, and not knocking comedians today, but you can hardly find one that doesn't drop an F-bomb about every fourth, fifth, you know, story or word sometimes. Mr. Jerry's stories were always clean. They were always good humor. You know, I believe he started off, he did something at the co-op feed sales and just kind of got started that way. And he would get up in front of some of the, you know, when they would have meetings, and he would kind of do an icebreaker and tell a little stuff. And, you know, his popularity just grew from there. Now, I may not be 100% on that, but from my understanding, that's kind of where he got started.
Then he went on to work for Mississippi Chemical. And that's kind of right. Where my uncle ran into him through the fertilizer business. But
I think that's when he moved to Yazoo.
Yeah, man. And you're talking about one of the... I think he's just unmatched when it came to sales. I don't think he ever went into to an office, from the way I understand it, with the intention of selling anybody. It was just to become friends, tell great stories, laugh with people, and they just bought from him for that reason.
It's hard not to buy from a likable guy.
Yeah, the sale was just the end result of just the relationship, I guess you'd say. But, hey, before I let you go, because I know you got a role, but another cool from that area, I feel like I'm Walt Grayson, you know, walking around Mississippi, whatever that show's called on Mississippi ETV. But another cool product or person that involved the hunting world from that area was the Lynches. Man, you grew up with them, right?
I grew up with them. The three boys, Chip, Ben, and Nick, we grew up with. Lynch was here. I actually talked to Nick last night. He called to tell us, congratulate. He wanted to hear about Luke's turkey and stuff, and we talked for a little bit. And 23 years is the closest. 23 to 24 years is the closest we can figure they were here. They moved here in either 70 or 71 and moved out in 93. But we grew up, you know, playing soccer, going to school, playing over Mr. Allen and Miss Jerry's house. You know, they had a swimming pool before everybody else did. You know, when you're out in the country and somebody's got a swimming pool and they welcome you over, I mean, that's just, back then, you were in high cotton. But we used to play in the warehouse. I mean, I had opportunity to buy the warehouse several years ago and just couldn't think of anything that I could actually put in it to make the purchase. There was another group bought it, I believe, when we started having an oil boom over here, and it never did come to fruition. But it was, looking back, it was way neater now than it was back then. You know, we used to go in and help them when they'd get a bad order, you know, a big order, not a bad order, but if they were behind, we'd go in and help, which a lot of times we were the rubber band boys. You know, we'd go in and put rubber bands on calls, and then we'd pass them off. They had one guy that tuned just about every call there, and, you know, he could listen to it and tell you exactly what it needed, and he would doctor on it and before it got his approval and left. And I think that's one of the reasons that, to me, the older calls just sound so much sweeter. I don't know if it was the wood or if the care with which they were made, but I carry an old foolproof in my vest that stays in there. It gets brought out and tuned a little bit, a little chalk on it every once in a while, and we go back to work with it.
There is nothing in this world like a good, raspy box call, loud box call, about 11 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to strike one up. But anyway, the Lynch box call, let me just tell you, people, if you turkey hunt and you never had one of those old lynchbox calls, whoa, go find you one on eBay. eBay, gosh, well, you can find them in different places, a few of them. You need to collect one anyway and have it.
Did I tell you what my buddy, we called him Uncle Allen. He's Uncle Allen to my kids. After Luke killed his turkey yesterday, he called and he said, man, I've got something I want to give Luke. Well, we know Uncle Allen well enough to know that he likes to play jokes and tricks a lot. Luke was nervous. He's like, do I want what he's giving me? And I'm like, baby, I don't know. Well, he comes driving up when we get back into town, and he brings him three Lynch turkey calls. Old school, all made in Liberty. Two of them are out of the box. One of them is in the original paper box or cardboard box.
Wow.
I mean, you can't, I told us, baby, you don't realize how special that is. I mean, he thought enough of you that he took calls that he's had on the side and brought to you as a congratulations for you killing your first turkey. I mean, it's, and you know, I believe I told you the other day, you know, their turkey calls have a little special meaning to me. You know, last year, opening day of turkey season, my daddy actually passed away. Well, I had called, I don't know, a couple of days before, and I actually asked Mr. Allen, who used to own Lynch Turkey Call. I said, look, I want one of your calls. He's now making the Allen Jenkins turkey calls. I said, I want one of your calls, and I want you and all three boys to sign it. That call actually came in on the day that Daddy passed. So needless to say, it will probably never go in the woods with me. It's got a little extra sentimental value to it that I don't know if anything else. I actually called him when I got it and told him I appreciated it. And we discussed, you know, what was going on that day. And I told him, I said, look, could you do me a favor? Can y'all go ahead and do me another one for my little brother and send it in? I'll ship you some money just as soon as you tell me to. And so mine arrived the day that Diddy passed, which was opening day of turkey season. Next week makes a year. And Micah's was actually made the same day that Diddy passed. So we both have something from them that means more to us than it probably ever will to anybody else.
Wow. That's a cool story. That is really neat.
It's amazing how things work out. It's not funny, but I actually got a call. I was on.
You got every one of them, right, Paul?
I'm missing. They made a deluxe model on the foolproof. And I think that's the only one. They made the deluxe model on two, and I'm missing one of them. And Mr. Allen had actually told me not long ago that he would go in his personal collection and pull me one out if I needed it to. But you can go on eBay, wait till the end of turkey season and go on there, and you can still find them in the original box. And that's what I've done over the last 3 or 4 years. I've collected them. I've got a little cabinet that I keep them in, and look, I got an old Ben Lee turkey call. I don't know if you can even find those anymore. I'm actually trying to locate a striker for it somehow or another, and moving over the years, I have misplaced a striker for it. It's just one of those things. I try to, any of the local guys around here that are building calls, I try to always pick one up from them. You know, they do business with me, I try to do business with them. And that way, you know, you've got something unique that's local from your area. And I hate to say it, but I'll pick them up if I'm off somewhere else hunting that I see something I like.
But those Lynch, I'm telling you, man, if you're collecting calls, and especially if you're collecting turkey calls, that Lynch box call, not one to pass up. Especially,
it's one of the sweetest sounding calls you can find. I mean, it's,
when you're 30
and I know they make
eBay.
A lot of them nowadays, but go back again.
No, I just saying that 20 or 30 bucks on eBay for one in the original box, or 40 bucks or something, that's nuts, because that thing 10, 20 years from now, don't tell them what it's going to be worth.
You can see some on there that fly high now. It just depends on who's bidding, who wants it bad enough. I know I've got one. I was missing two, and I finally found one of them in the original box, and that's been the hardest thing. I want them in the original box. So I've tried my best to keep it, you know, on that platform, trying to get what I wanted, how I wanted it. So I paid a good bit more for one. It was several people bidding on it, apparently, that had the same desire for it I did, and they ran the price up. But if you've looked for it for 2 years, you don't mind paying an extra $20 or $30 to get one.
I agree with you.
Well, man, you better get inside and get dressed and head to New Orleans.
Well, like I said, my wife's very good. She's lenient. When she looks in this truck and sees the mess I've got in here, she may actually tell me I've got to take her vehicle, which won't hurt my feelings. That means I don't have to take the mess out. But man, I appreciate you letting me come on and tell my story this morning. And
I think it's cool.
All I say is the turkey gods have been good to us. Two youthful hunters, first birds in 2 days. The good Lord looked down, and as the old man that taught me most of what I know to turkey hunt, he said, the turkey God smiled at you, boy. And that's all it is. We've been in the right spot at the right time and willing to be patient and wait them out.
One is a big enough deal, but two in back-to-back days, first turkeys, that's pretty cool.
Well, see, that's the worst part about going to New Orleans. That's what I've got tomorrow. If I could just figure out a way out, I could have a young man. We might be able to go 3 for 3.
I know. That's a new world record.
We'll go get it, man.
You need to tell your wife that the record's 2 in 2 days.
Rocky, I'm going to do this. I'm going to... You're a pretty big old boy. I'm gonna let you call my wife and work this out for me. And my wife's a little old bitty blonde headed thing, and she's normally sweet, sweet, sweet. But you give her a call and see if you can change her tune on this. I'm not gonna tell you I'm scared of her, but I do know where I need to stop sometimes. I'm not a small fella, but you know, you do have to.
You have fun in New Orleans.
Sometimes there's time to back up. All right, man, we will. Thank you, man.
No, I'm just saying that. If you're expecting me to call her, y'all have fun in New Orleans.
Thanks for the backup, bud. I know I've got your full support.
World record out the window. You're not setting it.
Doesn't look that way. And since she's packing a vehicle right now that I just pulled up that I can see her, I'm pretty sure I'm out on getting 3. We may have to do 3 in 4 days. We'll work around it.
All right, Poole. Have a great time in New Orleans. I enjoyed it. Thank you again for being here to tell those stories. I want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.